Good morning, friends. It is the Fan Morning Show, live from Toronto with Justin and Ailish. Happy Monday, but unfortunately it is Blue Monday, so I hope it is a happy Monday for you, but traditionally it is not. We will try to make that not the case this Monday.
Can you explain what Blue Monday is?
I can't believe you don't know what Blue Monday is.
I'm never blue. I think that's why.
Well, it's traditionally, statistically, the most depressing slash saddest day of the year.
How could you be sad slash depressed after that sports weekend, though?
I'm just telling you.
Not to trivialize anything.
Right? But in general,
if there's like a baseline, I'm feeling pretty good after that weekend.
I'm glad. Let's keep it going. But yeah, technically Blue Monday is the day where now the holiday excitement has finally hit the low. You've now received your credit card statements from
the holiday season. I have received mine. It's a little worrisome.
Right? We just went over 23 days in the city of Toronto with cloud coverage. That's a real fact. Look it up.
But that ended in a big, big way on Saturday.
So Saturday helped a lot with that, but I don't know where the end is. But so the weather has started to add. It's cold. But today is a real
I don't know. I think you're trying to spin it. I think we can. We have enough to grasp onto where we can avoid this.
Well, I agree. That's our responsibility, Justin.
The weather turned around, and we have the sports weekend, and we have a lot to look forward to.
It's a part of our responsibility.
Let's not fall into the trap again.
To not allow Blue Monday to be real for our listeners.
I think we'll do our best
to do that. I think we can. So let's start. It was a great weekend.
The viewing was exquisite
viewing opportunities. You had the litmus test for your Toronto Maple Leafs. You had the Raptors. Ooh, maybe that's part of Blue Monday. They lost 114-103 to the Hawks.
Nick Nurse is feeling it a little bit this Monday
morning. Nick Nurse is sassy and frustrated with the media. Clips surfacing from practice, I believe it was yesterday. So that's fun. You got Jordan Romano with a septum piercing.
How could anyone be upset right now?
And Super Wild Card Weekend, which had extreme highs and extreme lows.
It had extreme highs and extreme lows. It had a lot of extreme. You're right.
It was super wild.
It should have been extreme wild card weekend. I think all five games hit the over. There were some wacky things in pretty much every game. Every game had like a real like one moment that, not, I wouldn't say decided, but like one thing that really swung it in a direction or someone who's really falling on the sword. It feels like there's a lot to unpack from all these games. So do we want to go game by game? Do you want to start with general takeaways? How do you even know how to attack all this?
So we could go just game by game, just because you mentioned there's like one moment where if you were up getting a beer, it wasn't worth going. You missed the moment. You missed the opportunity. You come back and the entire game script is flipped. Something's gone on. You missed the moment. I mean, I guess Niners Seahawks first one up, it was probably the maybe least dramatic in terms of
it was
a moment. It was just Brock Purdy. Yeah, maybe slaying.
Maybe it's more of a narrative than a moment. But like, I think you're right. It was Brock Purdy. It was, okay, we talked about coming in. Is he going to be phased? Is this moment going to be too big for him? At times in the first half, it seemed like it was, but it also seemed like it was an issue for the entire Niners team.
And they said that post game too.
And then they just kind of reversed all that.
So he comes in. Early nerves. He speaks about a post game, says, you know, it's a little bit much going on, like for sure. But he's the first rookie quarterback to win a playoff game since Russell Wilson 2012. Youngest player ever in NHL history with 300 plus passing yards and 3 touchdown passes. And he passed every single test that he was given in that second half. And I actually think that a little bit of adversity, like in that moment, that's where you see if this guy's legit or not. He passed it. He seemed unflinching after the tough start, and he is now the first ever Mr. Irrelevant to do so. So, I mean, that's not shocking how many Mr. Irrelevants have actually led their team in a postseason game, but it is now becoming a real... The Niners are real, and Brock Purdy was the only question mark I really had coming into it. How's this guy going to go under the bright lights in his very first playoff game, and they are like, they could be a real, real Super Bowl threat after seeing that he's legit in a sense.
Yeah, it definitely was a tighter game than the score line would indicate. Like, it really got out of control quickly, and it, if we're talking about like the viewing experience, the Maple Leafs were kind of coming on at that time, so I kind of like pulled my attention away when it seemed like San Francisco was very, very comfortable in what they were doing. But they were losing at the half. They were losing at halftime because of a really boneheaded play. Someone took a run at Geno Smith, puts them in field goal range. The Seahawks are able to go up and really shock at the half. But what the 49ers did that other teams didn't do, and we'll get to that in a moment, is that they just kind of nipped it in the bud.
Yeah.
Like they, okay, that half didn't go very well. Let's make an adjustment. Let's be a far better team. And pretty much everything they did in the second half was brilliant. And that's a credit to Kyle Shanahan, credit to the defense, credit to the team. But also, as you mentioned, of course, a credit to Brock Purdy, who was able to settle in, settle down, and put forth a really, really good effort in the second half. So I think the 49ers did prove something in that game. I think they got over some of the, like the, you know, the progression that they had to, at least with that quarterback, in order to get settled and get comfortable in the playoffs. But they did what others didn't do, which was probably the most impressive thing about their weekend. And we'll go through the other ones, but it felt like they found something that other teams weren't able to. And I think that speaks volumes to what they can potentially accomplish in the playoffs.
Okay. So they do what other teams weren't able to do. And I think that's a perfect lead into Saturday night's game.
Mm-hmm.
Chargers and the Jags. And we talked about how that was going to be our premier viewing experience of the weekend. There was no doubt between the two of us that was number one.
Yep.
And my God, the Chargers chargered. And it was certainly a feeling that we brought up on Friday about, you know, this game could have chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. The biggest comeback ever, or third biggest in playoff history, but in both of those teams' franchise history. And it came down to that final couple minutes where things were, is this really going to happen? It was like when you were watching the Blue Jays, sorry to bring that up, blow it in their final wild card game. And you thought, no way. Like, this is not going to, is it going to happen? It's going to happen. And then it happened.
Mm-hmm. It did feel, well, this was, first off, a massive betting opportunity.
Did you get in on it?
When everything, I did bet, well, I didn't bet it at the half, but bet just the spread, because there was no way the Chargers were going to continue doing what they were doing. Like, the game becomes easier, right? When you're getting absolutely blown out in the first half, the Jaguars make all the mistakes in the world. The Chargers capitalize on all those mistakes.
God awful.
But there's no way that was going to continue.
No.
Like, you, the Chargers were always going to make it easier for you, and there's going to be some fake comebacks. Talk about fake comebacks all the time with Toronto Raptors. Fake comebacks happen in the NFL. So if you're getting like 20 points plus 20 Jags, like, that was an easy halftime bet. However, when you throw a guy like Brandon Staley into the equation, it makes it all the more attractive, because this guy, we called him Fake Sharp last week. It applies today. I was saying at the half, we were talking about the bets. I was watching with a couple buddies. We were talking about, like, what should we do in the second half here? And I'm thinking, like, 3 points isn't going to win the game, because they had to keep playing or it was going to go, it was going to get really chaotic. And they, guess what, scored 3 points because they stopped playing football. You can't stop playing football even when you have a lead. When you're gifted 4 interceptions in the first half, when Asante Samuel has 3, and you take advantage of those moments, you can't just stop playing football, especially against a team with firepower like the Jaguars have. So it was just fully a full implosion, and it was all on them and all on Brandon Staley getting really conservative when he's supposed to be the guy that's not conservative. And just fumbling it away. Like, it really is remarkable how bad they played in the second half, but also how predictable it was at the same time.
So we see two versions of Trevor Lawrence, which I think we've seen all season long, in one game. That first half, Trevor Lawrence throws, 4 interceptions. He was terrible. 4 interceptions in the first half of the game.
And then 4 touchdown passes in the second half.
But the ability to come back and flip the script like that, that's why he is in the caliber of at times, top quarterbacks in this league. Like, he is a young guy. There's that experience that I think there's a lot of rookie quarterbacks playing this weekend. Mm-hmm. And we saw all the reasons why rookie quarterbacks might lose games, might win games, because there's like, what are the
first-time quarterbacks.
Yes. What are the expectations for you at this point? But Trevor Lawrence and Justin Herbert was the matchup of, okay, these guys are both in their opportunity to win their first ever postseason game. One has 1 year more experience than the other. Who's going to prevail? And it looked like Trevor Lawrence had, the moment was too big for him. He comes back in the second half and he absolutely dominates. And that's kind of been the season of him where we see this. What is Trevor Lawrence like? Where is he kept last year? Like, he didn't have the best opportunity with his team. It was kind of felt for the kid. He comes in this year and he has the highs and lows, but to see the second half Trevor Lawrence, I wonder how Jags fans feel that if that's what he can put up, what's the limit? Like, where's this? Is the sky the limit with him? But that's the consistency question that we've had all year.
Well, I think it's just high variance. It's going to end up being high variance all the time because they can beat anyone because he can play at that level in which he did in the second half, but he also play like he did in the first half. Like, you don't really know exactly what you're going to get. It makes things a little bit tricky, at least when trying to forecast or prognosticate. But I think we nailed this game in that coaching was such a big, big deal. Because as bad as Brandon Staley was, that's how good Doug Peterson was.
Yep.
His decision to go for two after Joey Bosa has his meltdown because they knew they could score the two. They knew they could put themselves in position to win the game in a field goal if they get a stop. Like, the way he calmed down a team down whatever they were at the half, giving up 27 points, being their doors being blown off, like, that's a credit to what he is as a head coach. And one of my big takeaways from the weekend, especially if you were betting, is that coaching matters majorly. Mm-hmm. If you look at every game, the better coach didn't necessarily win the game, but covered the game. Shanahan, a better coach. Peterson, a better coach.
Brian Daboll.
Brian Daboll, better than Kevin O'Connell.
Obsessed with that team right now.
In the Bills and Dolphins.
Ooh, yeah.
That might be the one time it didn't apply, but I think the jury's still... Mike McDaniel made mistakes, but the jury's still out on Sean McDermott. I don't know what the Bills were doing. We'll get to them in a second. But, like, the Bills were not well coached in that game. And then, of course, in the Sunday nighter, John Harbaugh makes mistakes at the end of the game as well, but he's a better coach than Zach Taylor, and they covered. Like, coaching matters hugely in these situations, in the playoffs, and I think we saw that especially in the Saturday night game and the Jags coming back and beating the Chargers.
Like, the Chargers have an extremely talented roster of players, but the poor coaching decisions shine through in those moments, and with a margin of error that's so small in the playoffs, you can't have that be a reason you lose a game. Like, you're a head coach, you're a leader of this team. It seemed like there's a lot of inexperience, even though, and some of these coaches are first-time coaches as well, or the first-time coaches with their team, and like, sure, but you're...
First time in a big spot.
Yeah, you're in the playoffs. Like, it can't be little errors that end up being massive errors your team loses. So that was an example, as you said, of a team that was outcoached.
And you have to figure out, if you're Brandon Staley, how can we just be productive and run the clock at the same time? Because they couldn't run the ball and they couldn't throw it either. But how can you just keep the clock moving? They couldn't do anything. They couldn't check off any box in the second half. And all they really had to do was limit possession or cut down time and they would have been okay. But they couldn't do that. They couldn't figure out a way. And I guess a lot of it was given to them in the first half as well. But just basic stuff. Complete some 5-yard passes, try and keep the clock moving. And that's sort of like when you put yourself in that position where you're not, when you've lost that ambition, you're not even trying to score, you're focused on clock, you can get a bad situation there. But that's the very minimum. That's the bare minimum that you need to do, and that's in that spot. And Staley couldn't even do that.
Okay, so that's Saturday wrapped up. The afternoon or evening game, obviously, with the biggest comeback we saw all weekend, but Saturday or Sunday, 1 p.m., Bills, Dolphins. Were you wearing your shirt?
I was not. That might have been the issue.
Neither was I.
Oh, well, you promised you would.
To be honest,
it's a little lewd for me.
Couch at that point, and nothing.
The game hadn't even started, and you were part of the couch?
Nothing was getting me up. I was horizontal, sunk into the cushions. But that was one of the most uncomfortable, awful viewing experiences that I felt in a long time. Never did I feel happy or confident. Maybe for a little bit when they're up 17-0, but they're still icky feeling
Let's start at 17-0 because that's when I got the take that you don't like, which is that we don't need Super Wildcard Weekend. And I was so excited about it, right? I'm a big Super Wildcard Weekend guy. But we just watched, it was competitive. Niners and Seahawks, but then it wasn't competitive. And we're thinking like, okay, do we need another seventh seed? Do I need to fill what was a 4-hour game, by the way? One that pushed back the
I cannot
the
imagine
game.
How long that
it was ridiculous.
Like, imagine being there. You would be blacked out at that point.
Yeah, you'd had 6 hours in the parking lot before, and now you have 4 hours in the seats.
It was exhausting watching. I wasn't even playing, or I wasn't even there in attendance, but that game was...
It was brutal.
I think
it was
saw
so long.
2 hours worth of television commercials during that span yeah. of that game. Like, yeah, I know them all off by heart.
They made their money during that game. But I'm thinking 17-0. I'm watching Skylar Thompson. Yeah, they dropped some passes early, which is concerning for the Bills. But I'm watching that game like, there's no chance here. Like, why are we doing this? At least it like when you have seven teams that make the playoffs, it just extends so far deep into the range of mediocrity that it's not even it's not the right team. Steelers should have made the playoffs. Like, it's not that's not the team that mm-hmm. should have got in. It's a team that shouldn't have made the playoffs because they fell apart at the end without their quarterback, but they got in because seven teams get in. So I'm thinking, do we really need this? Do we really, really need to watch the Bills absolutely stomp and embarrass? And it's great for the stats. It's great for the vibes and, you know, carries the Bills into the next round. That's all great stuff. And then it's not easy. And then it's a complete nightmare and train wreck for the Buffalo Bills, who were, I think, one of the biggest losers of the entire weekend, despite winning. Like, Staley's number one, right? Staley's the number one loser. Who else after that?
Yeah, the Bills.
Like, you can maybe the Ravens, they're a competitive team, but they were starting Tyler Huntley, and they probably,
I mean,
they were a 9.5-point dog. But if you look at, like, in terms of disappointing performances, mm-hmm. I think the Bills might be second to the LA Chargers.
We were on track for probably the worst Bills loss of all time.
Oh, that would have been, I mean, that would have been a, I never even thought they were going to lose. But I'm just watching that game thinking, okay, they're gonna turn it around. They'll be fine. They're going to advance past this game, but they're not winning the Super Bowl.
Okay, so you have a lot of takes. You have the take that the Bills aren't winning the Super Bowl and that we don't need Super Wild Card Weekend.
Okay, I want these two kind of converge.
Okay, so...
I turned around and we need Super Wild Card Weekend. It was fun.
I never felt that way.
It's probably good that the Bills were tested in the way that they were.
Every game was competitive.
Every game was fantastic.
Every game had...
That's what I'm
wow
saying.
That's
moments? What I'm saying is I transitioned from we don't
wow.
need this.
So for one half of a game,
to the Bills are
you
toast.
Wrote off Super Wild Card Weekend.
No, it was just a thought that crept in my head, okay?
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
A thought that crept
I
in
couldn't
my head,
disagree more.
Which was
I loved Super Wild Card Weekend.
I loved it too. It was fantastic. But that thought was like, we don't need this to, oh, this exposed the Buffalo
okay,
Bills.
Okay, so second take then, the one that you're more steadfast on, is that the Bills aren't winning the Super Bowl.
They're not. I don't think they can win like that. They can't. They certainly can't win like that. But I don't know if they can eliminate that from their game.
Okay, so any other team, they would have lost that game, I think.
Oh, I mean, so, if you gave Cincinnati or KC the opportunities they gave Miami, they get run out of mm-hmm. their own stadium. Run out.
Okay, but
picks,
this...
fumbles, blown coverages,
yep.
strange play calls. Like, they're getting... We're talking about picking up 5 yards if you're Staley. It seemed like it was... a poor play, mm-hmm. something poorly designed, something that was completely misguided in the moment, or Josh Allen's rolling out and heaving it 50 yards down the field. Like, there was no variety. There was nothing. There was no, like, intellect, it seemed, put behind it. It was just like, hey, we're the better team, and we're just going to let Josh Allen show this with whatever he's going to do. Like, it seemed like no thought went into anything that they were doing at any point in that game. And I'm like, I'm watching that thinking, there's no way this team can get the necessary polish to turn this around in 2, 3, 4 weeks. Like, if they go to the Super Bowl, yeah, I guess they've answered some questions. They beat Cincinnati and Kansas City to do that. But how are you expected with that level that we saw mm-hmm. from Buffalo to beat Cincinnati, let alone Kansas City, let alone win a Super Bowl? I was really disappointed in the Bills. I'm you must be. I know you're a little bit more optimistic. You're more a fan of the Bills than I am. But what did you think watching that game?
I agree with a few of your points that there's no way they win the Super Bowl if they play that way, but they still found a way to win. A win's a win. And yeah, I think that that's something that the Bills have been able to do is find a way to win games. Nowhere in my confidence rankings did that improve whatsoever, but I don't think I'm at the point where I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl because of that performance. I do think that they would have lost that game against anyone else. There was a lot of luck. Like, you shouldn't be saying They clawed their way to victory over the Dolphins. They outlasted the Dolphins in that game. It should have been a romping of that team, and it wasn't. But a lot of those are mental mistakes, decisions that shouldn't have been made. And those are things you can clean up. Like, you can go into next weekend against the Bengals, who also, like, the Bengals didn't look dynamite.
Yeah, but the Bengals played a real team.
Okay.
Like, I know they didn't have their number. They didn't have Lamar Jackson.
The Bills.
But the Miami Dolphins weren't even, they didn't even want to be there until Josh Allen all of a sudden threw a couple picks and was like, oh, we're not getting the doors blown off us. Maybe we can play.
The problem with the Bills
football.
Is they play down to their opponents.
Yeah.
And so next weekend, they have an opponent, a real opponent, as you put it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they elevate. And, like, that's a terrible trait to have. You play down to your opponents, but if you look at it, that opportunity hopefully doesn't arise on Sunday or Saturday whenever they play.
They're the team that makes hard things look easy and easy things look hard.
Nobody beats themselves more than the Buffalo Bills.
And I think they kind of know that. And I think for that reason, they don't have the nerve. They don't have the nerve. They don't have the ice cold Joe Burrow thing, right? Those skittish timeouts where they were, it was like fourth and one or whatever. And it was like a big play. And
it was chaotic.
And they're calling timeouts. And they got stops. Like, mm-hmm. they made the play. Like, they don't trust this. They don't trust each other. They don't trust anything but Josh Allen rolling out and doing Josh Allen things. Like, just call the game normally if you're the play caller, if you're Ken Dorsey, mm-hmm. if you're Sean McDermott. Just trust what you prepared for. It seems like they just, like, they get punched in the mouth and they don't know how to react. And they're doing, it's just complete chaos. They don't act like championship teams act.
Those
and it was so obvious against Miami that they were unraveling. And I don't, but they can be settled. But
yes.
Can you settle it in time? Can you erase what just happened against Miami if Cincinnati does the same thing to you?
I think the problem with the Bills, which is, a catch 22,
sure.
is that they have the safety valve of Josh Allen can do inhuman things.
Inhuman would.
That's the wrong word.
No, what would
superhero
for?
Things they can do.
Sure.
And that's a really nice thing to rely on, where he can just go absolutely otherworldly.
That's a good one.
There we go. And he can win your team a game. But you can't always be relying on that. When you
I think that's their syndrome. They're just like, we have Josh Allen.
That's
they
the
have
the problem we have Josh that Allen can syndrome. Also be the comfort valve that you're like, you just get the ball, Josh Allen. But we saw that so many times during that game where he's doing only 50-yard passes where it's like you have to win in this glorious highlight reel opportunity where there was easier plays to be made, but the Buffalo Bills find a way or rely too heavily. And that's been the storyline all year long, is they rely too heavily on Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And if he's not
all
able
their
to
issues
be
were just so obvious and laid out for us.
Then there's your
and
issue.
We've been talking about all this all year.
Yeah.
Like, why is it so difficult? Why is like second and five, 25-yard mm-hmm. rollout heave 50 yards
ball.
Across the field? Like, just throw a 5-yard out there. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be the spectacular all the time. And it seems like they just, we are so talented and we're just going to put that talent
problem,
out there on the field
sure.
and expect it to overcome everything. They're the most talented team in the league, but they lack polish. They just lack that, like, championship nerve, that real steady hand. It just seems like they're missing something, and it's way more difficult than it has to be at all times with Buffalo. And I just don't know how that's going to translate when, like, the game does come down to a handful of plays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Miami game was like they could have made 50 mistakes, 50 big mistakes, and overcome it because they were so much better. But you can't make that many mistakes against the actual good teams in the AFC, and now they're about to play them.
And I don't think that there's an excuse, because they have been in massive moments in the playoffs, and that whole team has been in massive moments in the playoffs. And you should have a level of experience, whereas the other side of the ball, there's like a guy that barely has played football. And mm-hmm. you can say, hey, there's rookie moves, and a lot of these teams that we just mentioned had rookie quarterbacks, first-time players that have never thrown a ball in the playoffs. But the Bills should not have any excuses, because they've been there many times and they have the ability to overcome in big moments. And they barely scratched their way through that game, but a win, they don't ask how, they ask how many.
I'm asking how.
Now they're going to have to face the Bengals, who obviously played a better team, but they didn't win that game in overwhelming fashion.
But again, I'll just say it again. It was the timeouts for me. They don't trust. They don't trust themselves.
Those are really big issues you're raising.
They don't trust themselves.
Well, we're going to talk to Ross Tucker, obviously, at 8. We have a lot of big questions for the guy, and that's one of them.
Okay, we'll do Ravens-Bengals before Giants-Vikings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was expected to be more impressed by the Bengals because I thought they were about to hit their stride. And I don't even know if there's really much to nitpick. Like, they could have easily lost that game.
They almost did.
And it was a 14-point swing with a fumble recovery or forced fumble at the line and goes 99 yards the other way.
That ball could not have more perfectly went in Sam Hubbard's hands.
It was beautiful.
And that guy was, that's a big boy running down the field.
Yeah.
Like, I was exhausted watching him.
Clearly, he runs for a living, like a tight end, and he's catching balls downfield. But, like, it looked like they were the same size, and only one of them had the gas. But anyway, he got there, and the Bengals got to the finish line. But I take... That's a way more of a real victory than the Miami victory for Buffalo. Because Baltimore, everyone was too quick to count out Baltimore. Baltimore, if they had Lamar Jackson, they're not Super Bowl caliber, but they could have gone to the Super Bowl. I mean, this is a team that's been keeping opposing offenses down all season long. Very, very talented, strong coaching, belief in themselves, identity. They have something real to overcome. They just played them a week ago. They have game plan. They've seen it. They can feel it. They can make an adjustment. It was a much more difficult task for Cincinnati, even without Lamar Jackson there. And I don't even think Lamar Jackson was in the building for whatever reason. So
yeah, I want to bring that up later.
Maybe we'll talk about that. Winners and losers.
To the game.
It's just brutal. Anyway, the Ravens. It's a tough upshot for them because it seems like the Lamar era will end without really anything coming from it. But they weren't on Cincinnati's level, I don't think, because of the quarterback situation. But they still gave the Bengals a difficult game. And I think that's going to help the Bengals because they overcame something. They overcame a real hurdle, not one that makes you second guess. I don't think they're second guessing
themselves
this morning.
It's a very similar thing. They overcame a real hurdle and found a way to win against the quarterback that was not at their level.
But like a legitimate team, a legitimate defense.
So that's the only difference for you.
Yeah, I don't think... Do you think the Bills are feeling good this morning about their win?
I don't think
so. Do you
think
the Bengals are?
They shouldn't be. Like,
I think
feeling
better.
Pumped up about that win.
I think they're feeling better. It's a real team. But anyway, the Bengals didn't really shine. The Bengals didn't shine to the extent I thought they would.
The next game, which I think is Sunday.
Probably not sure, whatever, on the weekend, Bengals, Bills. It's interesting because it's, you know, they restart the game that DeMar Hamlin collapsed, was, you know, the last memory of these two teams playing each other. It's a massive, massive game. It'll be really interesting to see how it all plays down. The money is going towards Buffalo's side. They went from a 3.5 favorite opener to 4. I just feel like this is a really tough test for the Bills because you're coming off a mistake-laden game, and you're coming up against a team with the nerve that you failed to show last time out.
All right, last game that we didn't cover yet. Giants upsetting the Vikings. Vikings, we said it was going to be the upset opportunity of the weekend. Daniel Jones came out and put that team on it, but he won the game for his team. And Brian Daboll and what he's done for this season, for this squad, those are my takeaways that they have been really impressive and maybe lacking coverage or respect.
The coach getting the most of its roster is Brian Daboll.
Yep. 1,000%.
That he had like different, it seemed like, I wasn't watching it as closely this game, but it seemed like he had different schemes for different situations. Like there was one drive where it was just Daniel Jones basically rushing the ball.
Yeah.
And he still had a great passing game. He had almost 400 combined passing and rushing yards. Daniel Jones had almost 400 combined rushing and passing yards in a playoff game. Now, it's kind of predictable that Minnesota would be exposed defensively because they're brutal defensively. But they were able to outgun a really quality offense themselves, and the Giants put that drive together at the end of the game to seal it. Just an incredible coaching job all year long from Brian Daboll. And I feel like they kind of emptied the clip in terms of, like, this is all the fancy stuff we have. They were, they were pretty deep into their bag. They were, like, you know, fake Statue of Liberty handoffs at one point. Like, they kind of showed everything that they had, and that's what you got to do when you're not as talented as the other team. It's going to be tough against Philly. But that was a hell of a win and a hell of a season from the New York Giants, regardless how next week goes.
When you talked about teams winning because coaching makes a difference, this was it for me. He gets the most out of his roster, basically the same team as last year, but he's overhauled the way in which they win games. They won like no games last year. I think it was their first playoff win since 2011. It's a good example of a team not trying to be anything that they're not. They keep it simple. They put players in positions to win, and they all trust the process. They trust each other. Like, never unwavering, you know, well, we're underdogs, whatever. Like, I just feel like they're thriving on being this team that maybe has a good, better identity. And you said the Bengals were the team with the identity. Like, we've been sleeping on the way the Giants win these games.
I think Brian Daboll has just, like, the most accurate hold on what his team is and massaged the game plan to exactly that. And you bring it back to the Buffalo Bills. Like, you should be able to take advantage of the talent and the situation you have. Same as the Chargers. They have the exact same situation. If Brian Daboll gets that out of that team, you should be able to get more out of your team. And it just shows that, hey, maybe we built Sean McDermott up too much. Maybe Brandon Staley was built up too much, and now he's come crashing down. Dable's the one coach, I agree with you, Peterson, in that conversation, but Daboll was just one of the stars of Super Wildcard Weekend.
So Super Wildcard Weekend continues tonight with Cowboys at the Bucks, 8:15. We have Raptors at 3 p.m. today because they're celebrating Martin Luther King all day long. So the basketball starts at 1.
Mm-hmm.
So full day of basketball viewing. You get a little 3 p.m. Raptors Knicks. Then you can regroup and you can then watch tonight's finale of Wildcard Weekend. And some of the lineups or some of the games obviously already set. We've got Jags at the Chiefs next Saturday. Oh, there we have the times up. Saturday 4:30. You got the Saturday night Giants at the Eagles, and then Sunday 3:00 Bengals at the Bills. So All that's already laid out for you.
It's gonna be another great weekend.
Another super weekend. Okay, so Maple Leafs, they lost to the Bruins at 4-3 in the litmus test that we've been teeing up in Boston. It was a playoff.
It was outstanding.
Oh, my God.
That was an outstanding game?
It was outstanding. It was, think about all the things we want in a hockey game. All-stars.
Think of all the things we rarely see.
Exactly.
Like, that game meant so much. It felt, like, so important, and it feels like 80 of the 82 games don't feel even close to that.
We have all-star scoring, beautiful highlight reel goals. You have fights right off the top. Drop the gloves. Intensity was palpable. The crowd was electric. Beautiful 5 alarm bell saves by goaltenders.
Both goaltenders, yeah.
Late goals to clinch victories. I don't know what else you want from a hockey game. That was perfect. I mean, maybe the Leafs to win it, but it was absolutely a game that felt like it invigorated some more life into us having to talk about the Maple Leafs, having to talk about games that mean something, that meant something.
Okay, if we're doing, hey, how do the Bills make you feel? How do the Bengals make you feel the next day? How do you feel about the Leafs after that loss to Boston?
I think the Leafs beat themselves. And if you're going to look at takeaways, you definitely were able to skate and compete against a team like that. But you cannot be losing a game because of your own missed plays. Riley has that D-zone blunder, goes into Bergeron's goal. Timmins, oh boy, that DDD pass, Pasternak scores on it. Murray had the soft 5-hole goal for Greer. Tavares loses a puck at the very end of the game, the neutral zone for the game winner. So those are actual mistakes that you can circle when you watch the replay and say that's the reason that the Boston Bruins scored that goal. And if you're going to try to wrap up that performance for the Maple Leafs, if they hadn't made so many mental mistakes or errors, they would have won that game.
Yeah, I guess I can agree with that. It's hard not to make mistakes at old TD Garden, though.
Oh, for sure. But that's playing in the moment. Like, if you're going to play in the playoffs and you make one of those errors, 3 of them, 4 of them to lead to goals, you're going to lose.
Yeah, and they did lose. I thought it was a great game. I think two of the best teams clearly in the league. That's not breaking news. But also reason to believe you need to get better. Like, yeah, you play with them, but Boston's trying to get better too. And that standard is really, really high. And it's going to be a nightmare playing there if they indeed get there. I guess it's not a lock that they're going to play against the Bruins in the postseason because they're going to actually win a postseason round before they get there. But that is the standard. I think you witnessed it right there. That's the standard. That's how you play. Have to play at all times. Those are the things you can't do if you want to beat a team like the Boston Bruins. Mm-hmm. Connor Timmins is the one that's probably thinking about it the most. Oof. I think he had a tough night. And
it's too bad. Timmins, the fall Riley's. From grace of Timmins, I was all over the excitement of Timmins, and then he has certainly fallen.
It's come crashing down. Reality has slapped us in the face a little bit here. But my take isn't even because, I think they're on the same level, but things change, right? Bruins can get better, and it gets more difficult. And that's just half. That's just like a fraction of what it actually is, right? Against Boston in a playoff game. My thing from that was just like, man, there are so many games that we watch that just don't matter. And how can we make it matter more? How can games actually mean something more? How can we have more nights like that? I don't know if there is actually a way to do it, but it just seems like
that's the way the schedule goes.
Like we have one game circled, and that felt like it meant a lot, and I want to see it again. There's got to be a way for there to be more meaningful games. I don't know if it's just having better teams, salary. I don't even know what it is, but it felt like that was the last time a regular season game is going to mean something, and I'm glad it happened where it was in the schedule. I hope it's instructive. I hope you can actually build confidence, but also some urgency after what you saw, because it was two tightly matched teams. But if we're talking about nerve, Bruins have the nerve. They always have the nerve, and they didn't win because they had the nerve and the Leafs didn't. But it's just the standard is high, and you got to make sure you match it. And we'll see how the Leafs react to that.
Well, their next game, you can circle on the calendar, February 1st against the Bruins again. But until then, you know, they got Panthers, Jets, Montreal, Rangers is good, Islanders, Sens meh, Washington meh, but then they get Bruins again on February 1st. So when we talk about what can you learn from a game like this, Keefe spoke post-game about some of the lessons from this Bruins game, and then I guess if this is the moving forward point, it is great to have this mid-January because there's a lot of time to learn from a litmus test and see where you're falling behind against one of the best teams in the league.
And see a guy like Connor Timmins struggle because it's like, okay, we thought we might have had something. This might be a solution, but hey, maybe we just saw it laid out for us. It's not.
Here's key fun lessons from the game.
We know we can play with any team in the league. You can do it on the road. You can do it, you know, 3 games and 4 nights and all those kind of things. At the same time, you know, you can't beat yourself when you're playing any team in the league, for that matter. But a team of this caliber, you know, you can't give them freebies, and we did. So there's certainly two big things to take away from us here today. One, well, really, frankly, both very positive because you got to learn these lessons, you know, sometimes the hard way. And you like to think our group is past some of these things, but clearly not. But you know, you got it smack right in your face tonight.
Smack right in your face, like not a wake-up call because they've been, you know, one of the best teams in the league as well this season, but slap in the face of you're not going to be able to beat the best of the best when you make errors that they capitalize on. Like that's going to happen against the Bruins. It's going to happen against the Lightning. It's going to happen against the Seattle Kraken, who are the hottest team in the NHL right now. Mm-hmm. So it's dialing those things in. I want to ask you what you think about Morgan Rielly right now.
I don't know. I think it's hard to separate, like, I think Connor Timmins was the main issue, but how do you separate, you know, the player from the situation?
TJ Brody can play with anyone and elevate their level.
Oh, well, or are you talking about Timmins? Elevating Timmins?
Like, yeah, that's the thing. If you can't play with someone,
stuff. Like, this is Morgan Rielly, right? Like, he needs to be stabilized by someone, and Connor Timmins is the opposite of stability. At least in TD Garden is the opposite of stability. So I think like the environment means something. And I think this is a number one defenseman who has to be in a good environment. And that's really the difference between him and other number one defensemen. I guess there's more than that. Like there's guys at Norris Trophy level, but in terms of like an average number one guy, Rielly kind of needs to be propped up a little bit. And I think always has, and he doesn't necessarily do the propping up. So if you put him in a position where, hey, he's got to carry Timmins in this game in Boston, TD Garden, like it might not be pretty. I still want to give him the benefit of the doubt, some grace, but there should be some learning here in that we probably have to get better defensively. Like this, we're talking about what they need, but when it comes down to what they need against a team like that, which is most important, you need a little bit more stability back there, and the loss of Brody, not having him prop up someone, having Morgan Riley more out there on an island, that's the stuff that catches up to you and caught up to them Saturday.
I just think if you are a number one or a number two defender, that shouldn't be something that you need to, like, cater to.
That's the reality of Morgan Riley, though.
But and the reason I said TJ Brody is TJ Brody's like the fixer. Like, mm-hmm. you can put him with, and TJ Brody isn't the number one defenseman on this team, but he
can stabilize.
He's
Riley.
The number one ultimate glue guy that he can play with Connor Timmins or Jordy Benn or whomever, Victor Mete. And at least what we've seen with Justin Hall, like, stabilize these people. And that's like intangible. We kind of forget about how good he is at doing that. But mm-hmm. Morgan Riley has not been able to prove that. You said it. He has to be put with the best opportunity for him to flourish. And that's tough because, like, that seems like you're having to, like, cater to somebody that shouldn't need that if he's one of these big guys on your team.
I think the take could be that he's clearly not the most important defenseman on this team. That's TJ Brody.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not able to do that stabilizing. And it's important. You mentioned the fight off the top, by the way. Foligno and...
Loved it.
Simmons. I think old Nick Foligno's leading even after he left. I think he did Wayne Simmons a solid there.
Oh, yeah?
He's having a tough, you know, he's having a tough go. In and out. Not in and out. Barely in. And he's like, I'm going to give you a role here tonight, Wayne. Leading. It might be 3D chess. It might be, hey, we're going to show you that you have a role so that you're in the lineup and we play each other at a more important date. But I feel like old Nick Foligno did that for his buddy Wayne Simmons.
I like that. I like that take. Didn't think about it, but I mean, it's been tough to see what Simmons has brought to this team, because even there was he in the lineup like 2 games ago where the game ended up being physical with a couple shots and we didn't see him impact the game. Mm-hmm. But you come off, you fight within a minute of the game. It's a nice reminder that he can do that.
He's immediately relevant in the game.
That's right. I don't know how much more we see of him. We have seen him quite a few games. Oh, it was Philly when he was
put in.
Well,
and it starts the
in.
Narrative, and that's why I say 3D chess, because I don't know who said it. I don't know if it was the broadcast. I don't know if it was Twitter, whatever. But they're like, you need a guy like Wayne Simmons in the lineup
exactly.
against Boston. And who showed that to you? Who demonstrated? Who laid it? Who gave you the opportunity to say that? Nick Foligno, by agreeing to fight
You're right.
Wayne Simmons.
Buddies, I had money on a Nick Foligno goal. Of course, didn't work.
Oh, you only show the winners, eh?
Well, it was part of... Yeah, I do only show the winners, but I should also show the losers. But I did have a successful weekend in betting.
You had a big weekend. It actually made
sometimes
me think,
sometimes it hits, and then sometimes it doesn't, so might as well just celebrate the highs.
I love how we have completely, like, my betting strategy is, like, you know, investing into the market and trying to, like, get closing line value by betting early in the week. You just, like, show up on a weekend. I'm ready to burn $500 if I need to. And sometimes that $500 turns into a lot of money.
Yikes. I didn't burn $500.
But I feel like that's how you approach it. It's like, I'm going big tonight. It's like going to the casino.
I just was feeling it, all right? Sometimes you feel it and you got to keep riding the streak. My first bet was $20. And then I won
That's
a
true.
Significant amount of money. And I thought, well,
when you put that horse, I was like, okay, time to step away from the table or you're going to lose
right.
everything.
Like my first
step
bet.
Step away from the blackjack table.
The storyline is I did a double same game parlay on Saturday. Seahawks Niners, an anytime touchdown score from both teams, which hit. And then the Chargers Jags anytime touchdown scores also hit. So then all together, the two same game parlays, I went from $20 to $880. So then I was rolling.
That's a nice hit.
That's like the biggest hit I've had.
I guess you didn't go with $500.
It was $20.
It was
capitalized to $880. And then I got a little feisty
and
I got
going.
Lucky. But I did, when I bet on virtual.
You should have bought a lottery ticket on your way home.
When I bet on virtual horses at 11:45 at night, I thought, okay, that's it.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
But I hit the virtual horses bet, and I thought,
I don't even know how you got to that
you
point.
Can.
But yeah, that's when someone has to tap you on
right,
the shoulder.
And I did.
Like,
and
yeah, let's
I got
go
it while I was hot, and here we are.
And now you've got
I was gambling responsibly.
Your rent paid.
And sometimes it hits, and sometimes it doesn't. But you can help with that today at $590, $590 if you want to help us place some wake and rake bets. We need to. Justin needs a refresher.
I had the opposite. You hit your highest point gambling. I hit probably my lowest point in the wake and rake.
It'd be nice if we synced these up.
I had three straight. I sunk the waking rate three straight times to close the week. Mm-hmm. And I thought the Jordan Spieth thing was hilarious because he like set a record.
You know how many people message me being like, you need to sit Justin down.
I had a lot of people message me too, way more than normal.
That because was awful.
And I was just like, okay, this isn't as funny to everybody
else. It wasn't funny.
It was not as funny to everybody else. Everyone wants me to get back to my bread and butter, which apparently is NHL totals. So
that's
I promised someone
it better be that tonight.
This week I would only bet NHL totals because they think that's my wheelhouse and I don't want to let people down this week.
We have lots to unpack today. We'll have Frank at 7, of course. The fire has picked up again in Vancouver. A lot of terrible things happening with the Canucks. It's rough over there. What's happening? Obviously, we'll do our winners and losers at 7:30. Ross Tucker at 8. I don't know, quickly to touch on that, I think there's a lot of Raptors losers that feels like came out of that game. They lost, as I mentioned, the Hawks just tormented, you know, Trae Young and DeJounte Murray just annihilated the Raptors.
Little difference in the backcourt play.
Yep.
With Gary Trent and Fred going, I believe, a combined 3 for 16 from the field. And Trey and DeJounte Murray were outstanding. I think it's like, you know, when you get to play the next day after a tough game, it's like, mm-hmm. thankfully, we get to turn around. We don't have to let it stew. I mean, there has been 2 days between games. But the fact that they play early today, let's get to that game and we'll reset with the Raptors tomorrow.
You think?
How about that?
Look at you. This is the first time I think that you've been like, let's let it marinate.
It's not,
you love to come in here and be like, burn it.
No,
dumb.
No. I think you're painting an accurate picture of me. I'm a realist, I think, about this team, and I don't think many people are realists about this team. They're not good. You get real excited about a 3-game win streak, 2 home games against the worst team in the NBA. No, I'm not going to get all that excited about it. And then you turn around, and of course, you lay an egg versus Atlanta at home to conclude the 6-game road trip, where everything's been like nice and rosy.
But you went 3-3, and 2 of the games are against one of the worst teams in the league.
You went 3-3, and you played some of the worst teams in the league. Like, what? This team is not good. It's not. It is mediocre at best. I guess forget the grace we're going to give them. They're not that good, and we'll see how they play against New York Knicks this afternoon. And if it's bad or good, we'll talk about it tomorrow. But I feel like, you know, if we didn't get too excited about Charlotte, we shouldn't get too down on Atlanta because they are who they are.
One last thing before we take a break quickly. I wanted to play this clip, or maybe we should save it for winners and losers. It's Nurse in the scrum. Let's save it for winners and losers because I want to recircle this conversation. We had lots to talk about at the top of the show, but he is maybe giving us a peek into the vibes and the lack of positivity that's happening around that team right now. And as the face that goes to the media every day, as your coach has to address questions about energy and, you know, vibes and effort, he gave a pretty exposing answer about this team. So we'll put that in our winners and losers at 7:30, and we got lots for that. But we're going to take a break, and we're going to do the A-list on the other side. It's Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.
Sportsnet 590. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, so you just help your team come back from the third most significant NFL postseason comeback of all time.
Oh,
down 27.
Okay.
Nothing. What do you do after the game?
Oh, I know the answer to this question. What would I do, or what did Trevor Lawrence do?
What would you do, Justin?
What would I do?
You'd probably go home and go to bed.
Maybe 4 Pabst Blue Ribbons on ice.
Nice. Well, Trevor Lawrence, head to Waffle House, just goes and crushes a couple desserts.
You think desserts?
Well, desserts.
A lot of options there. Have you ever been to a Waffle House?
I have not. I've been to, and that's weird because I lived in the States, but there was no Waffle Houses by me.
It's
a bit of a Southern, treat.
Thing.
Not sure what he ate there, but he went post game, just like rolled in there looking like Trevor Lawrence, like wasn't incognito or anything, and just thought, hey, well, I'm just going to go get some Waffle House. And it's a whole scene. Everyone's obviously recognizing who it is. He's got it was always the Jag shirt on. He's just rolling in there, having a couple waffles. We're not sure what he ate, but that's a guy full of confidence heading into the next week.
I feel like you could get anything from steak to, like, you know, like the full meal deal reserved at Waffle House at any hour. One thing for certain in a Waffle House is there'll be a creature smoking a cigarette in the corner. So someone was surprised by Trevor Lawrence coming into Waffle House for sure, but I don't know if it even moved them. I don't even know if they cared, because if you're at Waffle House at that hour, you're there for one reason and one reason only.
He was also quick to get to Twitter and posted the best response to the game. You know that meme where there's a football player getting interviewed? It's like college or high school football guy on the field. They had us in the first half, not going to lie. He throws that up there. No comment, just the tweet. So he's feeling good. He can laugh a little bit about it. You don't like that, do you?
I mean, it's okay, but, like, you were actively horrible for half that game.
Yeah, but maybe, not going to lie.
Maybe a little bit, you know, if I'm Doug Peterson, victory lap, and he's, where's the lie? For sure, he's not lying. They had not only the Jags, they had Trevor Lawrence in the first half, but he did turn around, so credit to him.
All right, second one here, last one before we take a break. We mentioned it. Jordan Romano got a septum piercing. So that's underneath the nose. If you have, it's like the bull, bullpen. I thought that was a really good joke that I made.
Yeah, you figured it out.
But you raised a good point. You asked if that's got to be a fantasy football punishment.
Well, it can't be real.
I don't know. A part of me thinks that Jordan Romano could be a guy.
Transition from Buffalo to Jordan Romano.
He could be a guy that just wants to get a septum piercing.
Maybe.
He seems like he's a bit funky.
He does seem a little funky.
He's got this vibe about him. I can't pin him down, but maybe he's a nose ring guy.
He might be a nose ring guy, and he might be the leader of the bullpen. And it's not an intimidating look. That's
really?
For sure.
It's kind of punk rock.
Him, like, staring down the mound with his nose rings.
Yeah, I don't know if
it
doesn't make me less intimidated.
The light hitting the nose ring perfectly so it shines. It's not a good look for me.
You don't like it, eh?
No.
It's a no for you.
It's a no for me, Doug.
I don't like it either, but I don't think it changes my intimidation level if I'm a guy at the play. Like, this guy's got a nose ring. I think
it changes mine a little bit.
He's a badass.
Like, nose ring guy? I'm going deep on nose ring guy.
But I think you raised a good point, and I want to ask the text line. Let's just say that was a fantasy football punishment. Whatever. It's time for fantasy football punishments because wins have been distributed and losses have also been claimed. So if that's the case, what's the fantasy football punishment that your squad is doing? Is it gets a septum piercing? Which,
that's
gotta hurt.
It's a bridge too far.
And how long does he have to keep it? Because that thing, like, it's in there. But you know what you can do? You can flip them up. So he can hide it. I have a couple friends with them. You can flip it up into your nose.
Really?
Yeah.
Then when you have to,
it like kind of like you can flip it up in there. So
but
he
if you're trying
to
hide it, why don't you just take it off?
Well, maybe he has to wear it for a year. I don't know. I'm just asking. What's your fantasy football punishment if you have one? There's always good stories around
this.
Did
you not come last in yours? Did you not have to do anything?
Daniele helped me in the very final match by letting me beat him, and then I didn't come last. I came second last, so I don't have to do that. Anyway, send that at 590-590. Send in your Wake and Rake picks, too. We're going to take a break because we've got Frank Zeravelli on the other side, our insider. Let's talk about the Leafs test against the Boston Bruins and what is going on in Vancouver. That's next.